Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kreides. Today is October 25th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, Trillion Dollar Deficits Again. Make no mistake about it, folks. It's what we were telling you for months, that we would once again see trillion dollar deficits. Now, what's $16 billion amongst friends? Because the official word from the government is it's $984 billion. For the fiscal year. Of course, the government also conducts fuzzy accounting, so you actually have to look at the year-over-year change in the debt. I know this is a little confusing, but that's just some of the accounting gimmicks that the federal government pulls on all of us. The actual increase is closer to $1.4 trillion, because that's the difference year-over-year in the national debt. We have annual deficits or surpluses. Of course, this is the United States, so it's a deficit. Those annual deficits added up comprise the national debt, okay? So you have to look at the year-over-year on the national debt, which increased about $1.4 trillion, okay? So that's just a little bit of the fuzzy accounting that the government gives us. But nevertheless, you know, we're at $1 trillion here, $1 trillion. When we're told that this is the greatest economy ever in the history of the United States, this does not make any sense whatsoever. And I'd like to know where Thunder Thumbs is, our president of the United States is, because this is a huge number. Thunder Thumbs loves big numbers. So why isn't he patting himself on the back for trillion-dollar deficits? Because, I mean, we're nearing a record. We're getting very close. We haven't been this high, or this low, if you will, since 2012, in the midst of the great financial crisis, the Great Recession. Where's Donnyboy? Where's his administration? Where's Mnuchin? Where's Kudlow? Where's Navarro? Where are these guys? This is a big number. Aren't they happy with the big number, $1 trillion in a deficit? Where are they? Nowhere to be seen. Nevertheless, despite this, our stock markets here in the U.S. are nearing all-time highs, or have hit all-time highs. We had the S&P actually intraday hit an all-time high. We actually had the NASDAQ 100, not the entirety of the NASDAQ, but the NASDAQ 100 hit an all-time high. The NASDAQ, the broader NASDAQ is nearing all-time highs. The Dow Jones Industrial Average isn't that far off. But we have the S&P gaining 12 points. It is now sitting at 3,022 on the index. We have the Dow gaining 139 points for the day. The NASDAQ 100 closed at 8,025 points. The broader NASDAQ gained 82 for the day. The Russell 2000 was up 8.5 points. The Dow Jones Transports rallied once again 1.7%, which again is another head-scratcher for me. And the New York Stock Exchange was up 0.2% for the day. And again, I'm still scratching my head when it comes to these transports because of the Cass Freight Index. Now, maybe the Cass Freight Index has it wrong. I don't think that they do. Because looking at the Cass Freight Index, looking at a whole host of other fundamental economic data that we look at here on a daily basis, not just in the United States, but around the world, it really gives more credence and credibility, as far as I'm concerned, to what the Cass Freight Index report is predicting. And again, they are projecting that U.S. GDP will enter negative territory this year. So when we get the U.S. GDP print out for the third quarter, which is right around the corner, we'll have to see if that's in negative territory. I'd be surprised if it is, but the fourth quarter, quite possibly. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens there. But nevertheless, these markets do not care about bad news. They don't care about further deterioration in global economic numbers, further deterioration in U.S. economic numbers. At the government level, at the consumer level, at the business level, it makes no difference. Let's just keep going higher. Now, the thing that gives me a little pause with these markets making all-time highs or once again nearing them is they continue to climb higher on very low levels volume. Okay, very, very low levels of volume. So there's not a lot of conviction behind it. Now, if volume was spiking, meaning there's a lot of market participation saying, yeah, this is the way this market has to go, this is the way we want it to go, this is where it should be, then I'd take a step back and I'd say, well, you know what, maybe I'm wrong in a lot of my analysis here. Maybe this thing does have a lot more to run. And again, I've never ruled out a melt-up situation. That's always been on the table. But when it comes to probabilities, I'm simply trying to look at the fundamentals. Now, my mistake, perhaps, is that this market is completely decoupled. It makes no difference what the underlying fundamentals of this market and what the economy are right now. Again, at the government level, at the consumer level, at the business level, it makes no difference. Not even just in the United States, but globally as well. Markets don't care. The Japanese markets seem not to care. The European markets, particularly the German and the French markets, particularly don't seem to care. And now, with the U.S. markets now nearing or making all-time highs, we don't seem to care either. So what is sort of the momentum? What is the push that is getting these markets higher? Well, it has to be the central banks. It has to be the central bank intervention from the Bank of Japan, which outright buys Japanese equities. It must be the ECB, which in a few days is going to start their version of quantitative easing once again, the 1st of November, so that's only right around the corner. So Mario Draghi, the former president of the ECB, he'll be walking out in a few days, and Christine Lagarde, the former managing director of the International Monetary Fund, she will now be taking that role as the president of the ECB. So she'll be there, and we've already had conversations on her and what we anticipate from Christine Lagarde. She just gave an interview, I think it was last week on 60 Minutes, that she doesn't believe that they've hit the floor. That means that she still believes that they can go lower into negative territory, okay? They can go deeper into negative territory, negative interest rates, all right? And perhaps maybe they would even up the amount of money printing that they're going to do when it comes to the injections of their version of quantitative easing. And here at home, we have the Federal Reserve on an overnight basis, you know, upping their limit to $120 billion. On their term market, they're up to $45 billion from $30 billion. This is only over the course of a month, okay? We haven't seen nothing yet, believe me when I tell you. Because we were told initially this is just a one-off. This is just a quarter-end thing. There's nothing to see here, folks. Now, there is something to see. There's a lot to see, but nobody's talking about it. Donald Trump isn't talking about it. Larry Kudlow isn't talking about it. Steven Mnuchin isn't talking about it. Bernie Sanders isn't talking about it. Joe Biden isn't talking about it. Nobody's talking about it. I think Elizabeth Warren may have made a little bit of a comment on it, but that's about it. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody in Congress, Nancy Pelosi, doesn't talk about it. Mitch McConnell doesn't talk about it. Nobody. Nobody. So something big is taking place here. And of course, I don't expect these people to know much anyway. But nevertheless, there is no discussion on this whatsoever. And then the Federal Reserve to boot is printing $60 billion per month to buy U.S. treasuries of shorter duration. So what does that tell you? $60 billion times 12 months in a year is going to give us $720 billion at a minimum. At a minimum, because I believe that the Federal Reserve is probably going to increase this amount at some point in the future, in the not too distant future as well. So that's $720 billion, okay, on a yearly basis. That's going to take us to the end of October or, you know, November of next year. Well, what will that be? That will be election season, okay? So the Federal Reserve is going to prime the press, once again, put the pedal to the metal, and they are going to be buying Uncle Sam's debt to the tune of $720 billion. We have trillion-dollar deficits. The Federal Reserve is going to be buying 70% of it, at a minimum. At a minimum. This is ridiculous. Now, of course, this is, just so you understand from an actual technical standpoint, the Federal Reserve does not actually buy the debt outright. They go through primary dealers. Okay, so there's a middleman in there. But for all intents and purposes, they're buying it. They are monetizing the debt. Now, if there was a huge amount of demand out there, they wouldn't have to do this. Because China would be buying it up. Japan would be buying it up. The Russians would be buying it up. The Brits would be buying it up. The Mexicans would be buying it up. Americans would be buying it up. But there's no buyers. There's no buyers. Not to the degree that is needed to satiate the stupid demands and the stupid policies that are enacted and implemented in this country that are giving us trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see. And there's no leadership on this whatsoever. None. So the Federal Reserve is going to be monetizing 70% of our debt over the next year at a minimum. We'll see how this translates into the stock market. If this continues to juice it, if the market says fantastic, we're on the happy juice, we got our happy pills once again, let's melt up and let's go up another 20% or so, maybe more. Who knows? I've been reading a lot of articles, scanning through my Twitter feed today. There's a lot of people who are starting to believe that a melt-up is coming down the pike. There's a lot of people who are saying, well, the Federal Reserve is trying to recreate the 1998 episode where Alan Greenspan, then the chairman of the Federal Reserve, was able to do that mid-cycle adjustment, and the stock market was able to rally and had another blow-off top. Remember that? That was the dot-com bubble. So fantastic. The stock market goes up another 20% or whatever it was, only for the NASDAQ during the dot-com crash to come tumbling down almost 80%. So again, folks, is that what you want? Do you want to have a melt-up of another 20-25% and then have the massive correction, which will happen? I mean, the further they kick this can down the road, the worse the correction is going to be. Do you think you're quick enough and smart enough to time it? I mean, maybe you are. Good luck to you. I hope you can time it well. I'm not smart enough to time it. I don't know when it will happen. I really don't. I wish I did. I'd tell everybody we'd make a lot of money overnight. But I don't know. That's why I tell you to stay diversified and stay vigilant here. But this is complete and utter nonsense. Because this market, the global markets now, are completely decoupling from the underlying economics. How much longer can this sustain itself? I personally don't think much longer, but I've been fooled this long, so, you know, it can keep going. We have oil trading at $56.70. Brent, the international metric, is at $61.90 a barrel. Despite the little rally in all-time highs on the U.S. markets, gold is still above $1,500 an ounce at $1,504 an ounce. Same thing with silver. They were able to break through $18 an ounce, and silver is now trading at $18.04. U.S. 10-year Treasury is at 1.8%, so we're having a steepening effect of the yield curve, which we talked about before. We have a couple presentations on our website, thecapitalnews.com. Check those out, and our YouTube channel, The Capital News. So what's going on right now with the yield curve is the Federal Reserve is coming out to buy short-term notes and bills. So they're coming out to buy a lot of six-month, three-month bills. And they're sort of, you know, staying away from the 10-year. And this, what this is going to do is this is going to allow the yield curve to steepen and enter positive territory, because it's been in negative territory for quite a few months, specifically the three-month bill and the 10-year note. Okay, so now this is quote-unquote normalizing the yield curve, because the yield inversion going into negative territory does not happen that often, and that's why it tends to be a precursor to a recession. Okay, so but what people fail to understand is it's not just the yield inversion. When that happens, people say, oh, well, there's a coming recession, but if we can, you know, get it back to normal, everything's okay. Once it starts to, quote unquote, normalize again, that's when you really have to watch out, because now the clock really starts to tick down. So now we really have to start paying attention as to when a recession could be very much in the near horizon. So, you know, check out those videos on thecapitalnews.com. Also, as an update, I did recently update my website. I know it could have been a little bit difficult from time to time to find the videos on my website, but now there is an actual videos tab at the top of the website. Click on that and all the videos will be there for you. All you have to do is click on the link or the picture itself, and it should automatically open and start playing right there. And I hope you take the time to listen to those videos. There's going to be a lot more coming down the pike. And I haven't even scratched the surface. I mean, these are just, you know, some one-off, some things that are just some high-level discussions. We'll start getting more detailed as we make through, but I definitely want to make sure that we touch a handful of important macroeconomic data points out there before we really start diving in and doing a lot more detailed work. So check those out. I do appreciate it. We have the VIX, the volatility index, down 7.7%. It is now trading at $12.65. Folks, when you have the volatility index getting this low, if recent history is any indicator, it's not going to stay this low for long. Now, we do have, probably it's going to be a choppy week next week, and that's going to be due to the fact that the Federal Reserve is meeting next week to set interest rate policy and to grace us with their infinite wisdom as to why they're doing what they're doing and how they're doing it, and how everything is just perfectly A-okay when it isn't. So the markets typically during those weeks are a little bit choppy. So I imagine Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday will be somewhat subdued, unless there's a big earnings announcement, which could also potentially take place, because there are some big boys who are going to be reporting their earnings next week as well. So those are going to be probably the biggest stories next week, what the Federal Reserve does and those earnings reports from some of the big tech players that are coming down. I believe Google for certain and Facebook as well, and I think there's a couple others that will be coming out next week. Just as an update, because we were talking about some of the earnings the past couple of days, Tesla rallied an additional 10% today. Amazon, despite being down in after-hours market 6, 7%, closed down 1% for the day. FedEx, like the Dow Jones Transports, really rallied today and was up 2.6%. That's FedEx. Ford was also up 1.4% for the day. There is also a deal, that tentative deal is now ratified between General Motors and the UAW. Those workers who have been on strike have voted to ratify that deal. So that's one for the history books. That's out of the way. Now the UAW is going to Ford. So there's going to be negotiations between Ford Motor Company and the UAW. And just for another twist in the story, Ford, their debt has been downgraded once again. They are now sitting at BBB negative. Excuse me, not a good sign. Excuse me. And if you recall, during the Great Recession, Ford was the only company that did not go through bankruptcy and did not need a federal bailout. Now it appears that they might need a federal bailout if we do enter a recession or the financial situation at Ford Motor Company continues to deteriorate. Now, I am all against bailouts, but I'm just saying that sort of tongue-in-cheek, but we'll have to keep you posted on that too, especially if there's another strike, because the strike between GM and the UAW was that cost them almost $2 billion, and it was 6 weeks. So Ford is not giving good forward guidance. Their earnings were terrible. So if they have to suffer through a strike, I mean, things are not going to look good for Ford if that's the case, but time will tell, and we'll keep you updated on that as well. Throughout the Dow Jones Industrial Average today, just for a little update on some other stocks, Apple was up 1%. Microsoft was up 0.5%. Who are some of the other big movers we have here? Cisco Systems was up 1%. The big granddaddy of the day was Intel. And we talked about Intel yesterday, but they rallied 8% today. And Intel is a member of the S&P 500, of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and NASDAQ. So a lot of the rally today was on the back of Intel gaining 8%. Boeing was down 1.4%. Procter & Gamble was down 1.2%. 3M, the industrial manufacturer, was up 2.5%. And Caterpillar, despite giving poor forward guidance and not having a really good report, they are up today 4.4%. This is probably on the back of some more trade BS that came out in regards to U.S.-China trade talks. I imagine that's probably was the catalyst for that today, because once again, we have a statement that has no detail whatsoever in it that came out from the trade office, the trade representative, Robert Lighthizer, today saying, well, look, phase one, a section of the phase one trade deal is near completion. A section of the phase one deal. Didn't Donny Boy tell us a couple weeks ago that it was done? Phase one is complete. We just have to sign it. Isn't that what we were told? Were we lied to again? I think we were. And now we have no specifics in what Lighthizer tells us. Just that we are getting closer to completing a section of phase one. I can't make this stuff up. I mean, I'm going ballistic here. Maybe you like being lied to. Maybe you like being jerked around. I don't. I don't at all. Especially when we got trillion-dollar deficits to boot, which we're going to get in that too, just to provide some perspective on how big $1.4 trillion is. Okay? So there's really nothing going on with the trade front. We talked about this yesterday. I mean, how the markets continue to believe this is beyond me. But clearly, being a low-volume day and a low-volume week, there's really not a lot of buying anymore. So I think, and thank God, diminishing marginal returns are starting to kick in, perhaps, when it comes to all of this trade hope and BS, which is what it is. So you had Mike Pence out yesterday really going at it to giving it to the Chinese and some American companies. And of course, China responded today saying, you know what, Mike Pence, you should mind your own business and deal with your own internal strife with all of the gun crime and a whole host of other things. So everything just looks peachy when it comes to this trade deal. I mean, everybody's just getting along beautifully. I'm sure there's love letters that are taking place behind the scenes. But nevertheless, a lot of finger pointing, a lot of name calling, soybeans are going to save the day. And recall, from what we know, if we choose to believe it, in this phase one deal, or at least part of it, China is going to buy $20 billion worth of agricultural products, the same amount that they've been buying before this whole nonsense started, before the whole trade war started. So we're going to go right back to where we were. What are we going to have to give up? Because we're going to have to give up something. We're either going to have to cave in on Huawei, which we're told was a security threat. So I guess if you buy soybeans, there's no more security threat, or we're going to have to give in on tariffs. So we're going to go pretty much right back to where we were 2 years ago. But in the meantime, we've had all this nonsense, and now the Chinese are going to continue to slow play this, because why wouldn't they? That's what they've been doing for the past 2 years. You think they're not going to do it for another year? So we're going to continue to have more BS on the trade front for probably at least another year. Oh, fantastic. So what else do I want to talk about before we get to the deficits? Oh, yes. U.S. troops, perhaps some, will be sent back into Syria with some tanks to defend the oil. Oh, yeah, you got to defend the oil. You can't let that run amok. We don't care if people are getting killed, but you got to protect the oil. That's the same mentality that led us into these endless wars to begin with. We don't care about anybody. Men, women, children, makes no difference. We want the oil. We want the gas. We want the minerals. So what's he doing? If you want to leave, let them fight over it. I thought that was the whole mentality. We're not going to be there for 400 years. It's their land. Well, then let them defend their oil. What do we got to be over there for? And if that's the case, why are you sending an additional 3,000 troops to Saudi Arabia? Let the Saudis deal with the Iranians. That's their land. It's their soil. It's their oil. Let them deal with it. Why do we got to be over there? Because that's an additional 3,000 people. There's probably 10,000 over there right now. And we're sending another 3,000. For what? I thought you wanted endless wars. Bring them home. Bring everybody home. So I don't get it. So there's double talk once again. I want these wars to end. I want Donald Trump to be successful in ending these endless wars. I really do. But this is a lot of jive. This is a lot of talk. It's a lot of hot air. I mean, if we're going to do something, I'd rather the United States do it to protect and defend people, not oil. You want to get involved in World War II to stop Hitler from massacring thousands and millions of people. You do it to stop the massacre of people. Not oil, not natural gas, not precious metals or minerals, for people. Donald Trump, nope, I don't care about the Kurds. I want to protect the oil. That's the same mentality that got us into Afghanistan. It's the same mentality that got us into Iraq, into Libya, and probably even into Syria, too. And all over the place. It's why we're in Venezuela. I mean, open your eyes, people. If you got oil, that's where the United States goes. Now, for a little perspective with regards to trillion-dollar deficits, the United States brings in about $3 trillion. $3 trillion. That's a ton of money. We have a trillion-dollar deficit. That means we spend $4 trillion. So just for a little perspective, how big is $1.4 trillion, which is what we've tacked on over the past year. $1.4 trillion, okay? We have the entire GDP of Japan at $5 trillion. That's the entire output of Japan is $5 trillion. What we almost spend in a year in the United States is what Japan produces in a year. Germany, GDP, is $4 trillion. The UK is $2.8 trillion. France, $2.8 trillion. India, $2.7 trillion. Italy, $2 trillion. Brazil, $1.9 trillion. Canada, $1.7 trillion. Russia, $1.7 trillion. South Korea, $1.6 trillion. Australia, $1.4 trillion. Spain, $1.4 trillion. Mexico, $1.2 trillion. $1.4 trillion. Our deficit is as large as the entire economy of Australia, Spain, and Mexico. Is that amazing or what? And what do we have to show for it? Absolutely nothing. We have endless wars. We have crumbling infrastructure. We have $1.5 trillion in student debt. People can't find a job. We have healthcare costs that keep rising. I mean, if everything was A-OK, I'd say, well, at least we're getting something out of it. We're not getting anything out of it. And it's going to get worse. Because the demographics are getting worse. The amount of debt that is on the consumer household balance sheet, that is on the corporate balance sheet, that is on the government balance sheet, it's all getting worse. There needs to be a correction. A correction would be extremely healthy. It's also going to be extremely painful. And it's going to be extremely painful because we continue to kick the can further and further down the road. So, you know, it's something when we turn on the news or we read articles and people are, you know, they're complaining about corruption in some other countries. You know, one country, such country that's, you know, usually under the gun is Nigeria. Ton of corruption that comes out of Nigeria, they say. That's true. How big's the Nigerian economy? $397 billion. $397 billion is the total size of the Nigerian economy. Our defense budget is $700 billion. So, you know, you want to complain about the Nigerians and a whole bunch of other countries getting involved in corruption. They couldn't dream of the type of corruption that exists within the United States that we do on a daily basis. If you honestly believe that every penny that is sent to Washington, D.C. is accounted for and is completely needed, you're an idiot. There's no other word for you. You are beyond help. If you believe that, you're probably a Democrat. Because I've never heard a Democrat say that we got to cut somewhere. Now, except maybe with these endless wars, some of them talk about that, but even some of them don't. Some of them are in agreement with it. You only have a handful of candidates on the Democratic stage that are against these endless wars or are very adamant about bringing people home and stopping the spending there. Otherwise, it's just we'll just continue to tax, you know, about 500 people, and that's going to give us, you know, $100 trillion, and everything's going to be paid for, which is complete nonsense, which is why they're idiots. You know, there's really nowhere to put them. However, who's sitting in the White House? Donald Trump, a Republican. Who was in control of Congress, both chambers, for the first 2 years? Republicans. The policies that were enacted over those 2 years are leading to these trillion-dollar deficits. The miraculous deal, miraculous, you know, the fantastic deal, these aren't my words, this is the president's words, the great deal that he brokered or agreed to with the Democrats, because now they're in control of the House, to increase the debt limit is now guaranteeing trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see. So you Republicans out there too, I thought you were fiscal conservatives. Nobody. You have anything to say to me? You don't, because you're not keeping your word. This is why I'm not a Republican. They give lip service to a lot of the things I believe, but they don't do them. So they're a bunch of idiots too. Now, the other thing that really gets me going when it comes to these trillion-dollar deficits, or any deficit for that matter, is who has to pay for it? This is, to me, an unethical and immoral practice that we engage in here at the United States in, you know, near trillion-dollar increments. Who pays for it? Generations who don't even exist right now are going to have to pay for this in some form or another. They're going to have to pay for it with higher taxes. They're going to have to pay for it with higher inflation, which means lower living standards. They're going to have to pay for it with fewer opportunities out in the marketplace because debt has to be repaid back. So this is completely immoral and unethical as far as I'm concerned, because the current generation and generations who have voted for this nonsense over the past, I don't know, 40, 50 years, if not longer, they're going to be gone. They're going to say bye-bye. They're going to kick their own can. They're gone. And they're going to say, well, now you got to pay for all this stuff. You didn't vote for it. You didn't want it. You weren't even around to vote for it. You probably don't even like what we voted for that you have to deal with. Too bad. You got to pay for it. We got to change this system, folks. We have to change it. You got to end the Fed. You have to abolish the federal income tax. That will start starving the beast. Because everybody might be well-intentioned, I'm even a little skeptical of that, but everybody said, well, you know, you got to take care of these people, you got to take care of those people, you got to take care of this, blah, blah, blah. And before you know it, you're spending $4 trillion. 1.4 of it, you don't have. So how are you going to make up for it? Higher taxes, higher inflation, lower living standards, fewer opportunities for younger generations. Because that growth is not going to be there, because instead of investing in the future, that capital now has to go back to pay Uncle Sam or the holders of that debt. Well, who holds a significant amount of that debt but the Federal Reserve? You're starting to see this vicious cycle? You're starting to get my rationale as to why you got to starve the beast, why you have to abolish the Federal Reserve, why you have to abolish the federal income tax? Government is not supposed to be this big and this powerful. And if it wants to be this big and this powerful, then there needs to be accountability for the people who vote for this nonsense to pay for this nonsense during their lifetimes, not to pass it on to future generations. We can't even get that straight. And again, you might say, well, Alex, look, we have all of these fantastic things because of it. If we did have all of these fantastic things because of it, then you might have me in a corner. I'd still get my way out of it, believe me. But we don't even have that. I can't even point to bullet trains that are from, you know, New York to LA or New York to Miami that get you there in a couple hours. There's none of it. We can't tout having the best airports in the country or in the world, because we don't. We can't tout having the best education system, especially K through 12, because we're not even close. We do have some of the best colleges and university, that there's no debate. But when it comes K to 12, these kids can't read, they can't write. It's a shame. They don't know anything. So we don't even have that. You tack on the two-tier justice system. You tack in, or you put in the political circus and the divisiveness that exists within this country. Not good. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. I'm still somewhat optimistic that the future can be brighter, but not with these yahoos in power. Not with these institutions still in existence. $1 trillion deficits. Nothing to show for it. I'm speechless. $1 trillion deficits again. It's Friday, folks. Sorry for the somber note. Maybe it'll be a little bit more uplifting if I do a podcast on Sunday. Check out thecapitalnews.com for some other videos. One of the other presentations that I'm working on now actually is timely because it does deal with federal spending and revenue and all that stuff. So check that out. That'll be posted, I hope, this weekend. And I hope to be back on Sunday for a week ahead segment as well, because next week is sure to be a doozy one way or the other. I'll probably update the volatility model to see where we stand, because there wasn't a whole bunch of volatility with those plus or minus 1% moves in the market this week. And it's going to be coming, I can almost guarantee it, over the next couple of months. So I'll probably update, and that'll be the topic of our discussion there, unless there's some breaking news that breaks over the weekend. So enjoy your weekend. Hope to be back with you on Sunday. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.